Yeah, so as Sophie said, we're continuing, just grab my notes, we're continuing through Malachi. And hopefully you'll remember, if you were here anyway, what the book was about. The prophet Malachi is confronting Judah, the southern kingdom of Israel, with her sins that she, as a people, have committed since they've returned to Jerusalem. And in the first couple of weeks ago, the first message, we thought about the idea that it was an overarching kind of apathy or laziness or complacency in their relationship with God. And Oz spoke last week about how this came out in terms of the sacrifices that were being brought to God in the temple, that they would bring poor quality sacrifices, the kind of, well, that's enough, that'll do attitude towards God. And today, the passage we're looking at is about how the Jews were divorcing their wives to marry women from the pagan culture around them. And this is one of the passages in the Old Testament that speaks sort of about divorce and what that means and how God feels about that. And I think divorce or just broken relationships generally are something that many of us, most of us, possibly all of us, have been impacted in some way in our family, friends, all these kind of things. And it can be a very painful, tricky pastoral situation. And I want to begin by saying I'm not going to talk about the rights and wrongs and sort of ins and outs of divorce this morning, though I am going to talk about it. But if you want to know what I think about this topic, or you are curious about sort of the concept of divorce in the Bible particularly, then I will recommend this book to you, Divorce and Remarriage in the Church by David Instone Brewer. Fantastic book, looking at theology, the historical context in the Bible of Old Testament view of divorce and some of Jesus's teachings on divorce and pastorally. It's an excellent book. So if you have questions about divorce, particularly in light of anything I say this morning, then I'll just point you at this book anyway, so don't come and ask me. But if you sort of want to think, what does the Bible really teach, or how do we practically deal with this issue of divorce in our lives today, then grab a copy of that book if you can. But we're going to look at the passage, what Malachi actually says this morning. We're going to talk about, it's going to tell us about relationships and how the Jews' decision to divorce their wives, to marry into the pagan peoples, how it broke God's heart, essentially, because the Bible and God understands that relationships aren't really about rules. They're about something else. They're about human hearts. And so Malachi begins 2:10 here. Do we not all have one Father? Did not one God create us? Why do we profane the covenant of our ancestors by being unfaithful to one another? So Malachi begins talking about this topic by starting by essentially saying we're a family. The people of God are a family, and you don't become part of a family just by, you know, obeying the rules. That's not what family is about. It's about relationships. It's about something other than rules or laws. It's about promises between each other. It's about commitments to one another. And this is what the people of Jerusalem are charged with breaking. They're charged with breaking not the rules, not necessarily the law. They're charged with breaking promises to one another and promises to God. And this is what it's about. It's about broken relationships. The issue was they were married, and yet they divorced their wives to marry the women of the pagan cultures around them. And there would be reasons for this. One of the reasons might be simply that they didn't feel safe. There they were, this small group of people in the middle of a hostile area. And so they decided, you know, well, if we marry these people, We can sort of, we're related to them, and we can have treaties with them, and we can feel safe because we know they're no longer a threat to us. They're family. Or maybe there were those who took this opportunity to say, well, you know what? Following Yahweh is okay, but their religion looks so much more fun than ours. Looks so much more interesting. So maybe we should sort of, you know, take on board some of the things they say or they are bringing. Or maybe there were just those who used all this as an opportunity to say, you know what, my wife's getting old. She doesn't, you know, I don't feel the same way I used to feel about her. Here's an opportunity to, you know, upgrade to a younger model or something like that. There's all kinds of things going on. And some of those reasons for divorce play into the reasons why people get divorced and why relationships break down today. It doesn't really matter why. The fact was they'd broken their covenants with one another. They'd broken their promises with one another. They'd broken these things, not just with one another, but broken their covenant with God by doing this. They broke faith, as Malachi puts it. And then here's the thing. Here's the interesting thing that Malachi goes on, or God goes on to say. He goes on to say, Judah has been unfaithful. A detestable thing has been committed in Israel and in Jerusalem. Judah has desecrated the sanctuary the Lord loves by marrying the daughter of a foreign god. Do you see what God does here? Before he begins to speak specifically, you know, you've done this thing and this is why it's bad, or this is why I don't like it. It's like God can't help but paint the bigger picture and say, this isn't just about your relationships with each other. This is about what you have done in your relationship with me as a people. How you have treated me. His people have not just been unfaithful to one another, they have been unfaithful to him. They've been unfaithful to God. God often uses marriage as an image in the Old Testament of his relationship with his people, both in the old and the new. Marriage is often used as an image for this is my relationship with my people. We are in a marriage covenant. You know, Martin Luther, the reformer, once said something like that marriage, when it's done properly, is the closest thing you will find to heaven on earth. He said that. And what he was saying was marriage was given to us by God as, you know, here is a way of an image of what every relationship should be like. The closeness, the devotion, the intimacy. Marriage is an image of how our relationships will be in heaven. That's what he was saying. If it's done well, if it's done properly. So it's no wonder that God uses it often in the Old and the New Testament to say, this is the kind of thing I want with my people. This is the kind of relationship that I want with my people. And here he links what individuals have done, divorcing their wives to marry pagan women. He links it to what his people have done to him. They have divorced me to marry the daughter of a foreign god. They have broken their relationship with me to marry the daughter of a foreign god. And this image of divorce comes up in the Old Testament every now and then. And it's kind of an interesting image because God plays himself as sort of on both sides. He talks here about how they've abandoned him. They've divorced him to marry another. In other parts of the Old Testament, Ezekiel 16, Jeremiah chapter 3, where it's put quite bluntly, God says, they were unfaithful, so I divorced them. I sent them away. And God kind of comes back to this image of marriage and divorce to talk about his relationship with his people. And he sometimes paints himself as the one who divorces and as the one who is divorced. It's just a metaphor, just an image that God uses. But regardless of how God uses it, the message is the same. God knows what it is like to be on the receiving end of unfaithfulness. God knows what it is like to be on the receiving end of broken promises, broken covenants. God knows what it is like to have his heart broken by those whom he loves. God
absolutely knows what that is like. I think sometimes the way we view God, we think of him as kind of quite distant, looking down and sort of saying, yeah, that's good, that's bad, based on, you know, observing from a distance. But God has first-hand experience of rejection. God has first-hand experience of being lied to, of being, you know, told one thing, but another happened. He knows what it's like. He's right in the middle of it. And this is the framework for the arguments in this book. It's not that they've failed to keep the law that God's given them. It's that they've broken faith with one another and they've broken faith with God. They have broken their covenants and their promises to each other, and they have broken their covenants and promises with God. And they have broken one another's hearts, and they have broken God's hearts. And God's in the middle of it, right there. Because we don't worship a God who just identifies with humanity from a distance. We worship a God who became human, who knows exactly what it is to be human, to share our burdens, our trial, and our pains. And there is a consequence to this brokenness. There is a consequence to the brokenness in our relationship, the relationships with each other, but the relationship with God. Malachi goes on to say, as for the man who does this, who divorces the wife of his youth to marry into the pagan communities around him, whoever he may be, may the Lord remove him from the tents of Jacob, even though he brings an offering to the Lord Almighty. Another thing you do, you flood the Lord's altar with tears. You weep and wail because he no longer looks with favor on your offerings or accepts them with pleasure from your hands. You ask why? Is it because the Lord... It is because the Lord is the witness between you and the wife of your youth. You have been unfaithful to her, though she is your partner, the wife of your marriage covenant. So they say, why, God, are you not accepting our sacrifices? Why are you not answering our prayers? Why are you not responding to us? And God says, it's because you've done this. He's sent, it's sort of in a sense saying, this thing you've done is so terrible, I can't even bring myself to look at you right now. Don't ever underestimate how strongly God feels about people and about relationships. Don't ever underestimate it. It doesn't matter how you feel about it. It doesn't matter how much you feel people deserve the bad things that come their way. It doesn't matter how much you feel like they're not important people. Never underestimate how much these people matter to God and how much their relationships matter to God. And just because someone doesn't matter to you, just because someone is not close to you, don't think they're not close to God. Don't think God doesn't care about them and who they are. Well, divorce or broken relationships in general are difficult, are painful, are often messy things. Sometimes it happens, relationships break down, divorce happens, and you know, the couples will look at one another and say, yeah, it's just not working, it's fallen apart, we're both to blame for this, you know, you did this, I did this, we're both to blame for the breakdown in the relationship. But also, sometimes, you know, divorce happens and the blame is not equal. The guilt is not equal. In relationships, sometimes one party is more sinned against than sinning. And God knows what it is to be the wronged party. He knows what it is to be on the receiving end of that brokenness. And he feels strongly about the relationships between his people. We'll, in a few minutes, we'll get towards the end of this passage we're looking at where God says, I hate divorce. Some translations can't bring themselves to write that. They're a bit more pastorally sensitive and they translate it slightly differently, but it's in there. God says, I hate divorce, which is hardly an unemotional, detached word, is it? I hate divorce. Why does God hate divorce? Why does he say that? He's not saying, whatever happens in the relationship doesn't really matter as long as you don't get divorced. He's not saying, divorce is a worse sin than all the other things in a relationship that lead to divorce. No. I think he's saying, I hate divorce because divorce is a symptom of brokenness. And it's the brokenness that God hates. Divorce is the consequence of selfishness, of lies, of cheating, of sin. It's what you get when you make a promise to another person, a promise before God, and that promise lies shattered and broken on the floor. That's what you get. And that's what God hates. He hates the brokenness that causes divorce. As he says, as we said right at the beginning of this passage, God says, why do you do this to one another? Why do we treat each other this way? We're family. There's a bond between us. Why would we do this? And then we're getting on to the end of this passage here, Malachi 2:15. Has not the one God made you? You belong to him in body and spirit. And what does the one God seek? Godly offspring. So be on your guard and do not break faith with the wife of your youth. I hate divorce, says the Lord God of Israel, and I hate a man's covering himself with violence as well as with his garment, says the Lord Almighty. So guard yourself in your spirit and do not break faith. This is what God hates, the breaking of faith with one another. That's what he hates. He said, don't destroy something that doesn't need to be destroyed just because you're bored, just because you want to, just because the whim takes you, because you look at the wife of your youth, the husband of your youth, or not your youth or whatever, and say, you know what? You're not really enough for me anymore. You're not enough for me anymore. Don't do this, says God. And it's all the same issue, really. It doesn't matter whether they broke these relationships because they feared the people around them and they wanted better sort of political alliances. It doesn't matter whether they were attracted by the faith of these pagans, their religious rituals. It doesn't matter whether they just did it because they thought, well, you know, I'm bored in my relationship. It's all the same issue. It's what I have here, what you have given us, God, is not enough. And this is why the relationship breaks down between God and Judah, is because to Judah they say, God, you know what, it's been fun, but you are no longer enough for us. You are not enough for us. God, you brought us back to Jerusalem. We never thought we'd return, to be honest, but you brought us back. And we rebuilt the walls and the temple, and all around us were these people who wanted to destroy us, and yet you kept us safe and you helped us complete this task. But now, it's not enough. We want something different. We want some other protection. We want some other way of feeling good about our faith and our lives and our gods. And we just don't feel it's not working for us, God. So we're going to change things up. We're going to change the relationship that we have. God, you are not enough for us anymore. There's a passage in Jeremiah here, just three verses. Has a nation ever changed its gods? Yet they are not gods at all. But my people have exchanged their glorious God for worthless idols. Be appalled at this, you heavens, and shudder with great horror, declares the Lord. My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. And this passage brings to me, sort of conjures up an image in my mind of a dry and barren landscape. And people all over this landscape, and they've dug wells in the ground. And they're all down on their hands and knees supping this water from the wells, but it's all dirty and it's salty and not very pleasant water at all. And yet, if they looked up and just looked to the left or to the right, it doesn't matter. They're surrounded by a lush, verdant green valley and a river that flows through this valley, giving life to everything in it. And in this river, at this river, is God. And God says, is anyone thirsty? If anyone is thirsty, come to me and I will give him something to drink. And these people drinking from their shallow, dirty wells look up and they say, you know what, God, we're all right here, thank you. We're okay here. And Larry Crabb, the Christian psychologist, calls this habit in ourselves, he calls it well digging. This thing inside us that, you know, God offers us everything we need and we say, yeah, but the problem is, God, you don't give it to me when I want it. You don't give it to me the way I want it. In other words, it's all very well of you to offer me water, God, but the problem is it's your water. It's not my water. And so they dig wells. We dig wells and we get water our own way, and it's not good water. It's salty and it's dirty and it's tastes foul, but the thing is, it's our water and we can have it whenever we want on our terms. And no wonder God says, look at this, to the heavens. Look at this. Have you ever seen anything as ridiculous as this? I have everything my people need. And yet they go and dig their own wells. And they forsake me. Because they can't, they just don't want what I offer. I don't want God's water because it's not my water. It's not available when I want it on my terms. So I will settle for less than the best because at least it's mine. God, I want to feel safe, but you don't make me feel safe the way I want. You know, you talk about protecting me, but I don't necessarily feel particularly safe. So I will find relationships that make me safe. And if I have to break some of my old relationships to do that, so be it. God, I know following you is supposed to meet my needs, but I don't really feel like it is. So I'll find some other things to believe instead that make me feel better. God, I know you're supposed to be the source of joy and happiness and content, but I'm not really feeling it right now. And, you know, I know there's some people around me who will make me feel good about myself and I won't have to try very hard to get there. All these things. The question then, is God enough? Is God enough? The people of Judah thought, no, you know what? God isn't enough. God isn't enough for us. And it came out in their relationships. You can't paper over the cracks in your relationships. Because that's always where it comes out. It always comes out in your relationships. If things aren't going well between you and God, it will find its way out in your relationships. You can come to church and you can put on the big smile and you can sing as loud as you want. And everyone around you can look at you and say, wow, I wish I was more like them. They're so holy, so special. But the truth comes out in your relationships. The brokenness comes out in your relationships. When God isn't enough for you, it comes out in your relationships. And sometimes I feel like life is a daily struggle to remember that God is enough for whatever I face, whatever happens. And when I'm struggling with that, when I'm feeling like God isn't enough and there are other things that are meeting the needs that God should be meeting, it comes out in my relationships. And you may look at me and you may not know any different, but you speak to my wife, you speak to my children. They will know when it's not going so well with me. Because it comes out in those relationships. Someone for whom God is enough will be content with what God gives. And they will not feel that need to look to their relationships to make them feel good or feel safe or to meet those fill those holes inside them. The truth is, God is enough. Whether you like it or not, God is enough. Whether it annoys you that he doesn't do things on your terms, God is enough. The people of Judah forgot that. They forgot that God was enough. You guys are lucky because you've got me standing here reminding you that God is enough. So, I'm going to try, and I hope we'll all try, to add that to the list of things we need to remember every day. That whatever we face, the easy temptation is to look for our relationships to meet those needs, and the easy temptation is for us to just change the relationships when we're not getting what we want. And the easy temptation is to let our friends and our family become, you know, tools, things we can discard if we want, just because it suits us and suits our needs in the time. But remember that when you push these people away, you are pushing God away. So remind yourself every day, whatever I face today, God is enough. Let's pray. Father, it's difficult to remember that. It's certainly difficult to feel that that is true, that you are enough. But Lord, I know, I'm sure most of us know the truth. And that what you offer is deeper and more fulfilling, more robust, more life-giving than anything else. Father, forgive us when we settle for second best just because it's easier. Forgive us when we see people around us as tools to be used for our own self-interest. Forgive us, Lord, when we push you away and break our promises to you. Father, I pray you will help us to remember. And as the week comes and there'll be good days and bad days, you'll help us to remember that whatever we face, you are enough. You've promised to meet our needs. You've promised to be with us. And, you know, if we look out the window and the sky is falling down, you've promised, and a promise is a promise. So, Lord, please help us to hold on to that promise, to remember it, and to let our relationships be shaped by that rather than our own selfish desires. Amen.